Good morning, everybody. I hope everybody is wake up now after the beautiful dinner yesterday and ready for this early session today. We have a session about data collection and metadata, which is quite, in some way, a little bit heterogeneous. However, this is the aspects of metadata and data collection are, of course, of very interesting for everybody working in official statistics. It's one of the most challenging topics nowadays. Whoever has tried or was engaged in some way to install or to develop some kind of metadata database or metadata repository, or on the other hand, to bring in all the necessary data or in data collection issues, statistical products and processing in this area, knows what I'm talking about. And I'm looking quite forward to the next 1.5 hour session, where we will have three presentations, one from France, INSEE, one from Denmark, and one from Eurostat. And we will do it like it is a common habit in this conference. We will have the three presentations on the stack. However, since we are only three presenters here, we can make advantage of it in two regards. First one, I will grant the speakers a little bit more time for the talk, so approximately 15 minutes. And also I can provide, after each presentation, some time for short questions for clarifications if there is a need. However, I will do it as it is always in this conference, that the main part of the discussion will be held after finishing the presentations. With that, I would directly hand over the floor to Marie-Hélène Kerouanton from INSEE. She's working there for a long time, and she's engaged in the field of metadata repositories in 6 years, and she's working in a quality unit, and her presentation will be about the French Statistical Metadata Repository, RMAS, managing metadata throughout the whole statistical process. Marie-Hélène, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for saying my name quite correctly. Even French people don't succeed immediately. So what I want to tell you about today is quality. Metadata quality as a key element of our strategy for quality. Not only because we intend to release metadata with each statistical operation and to keep them up to date according to the principle 15 of the Code of Practice. What we intend to do actually is to provide tools to all the actors involved in the process of statistical production to manage metadata, that is for accessibility and clarity, to share metadata data, that is for coherence and comparability, and to use metadata to improve statistical process. So, I had two slides about the old system, which was stopped yesterday. So I won't tell you more about it. You can read the article of the slides. I suggest we move forward to the present and the future. It's a bit longer. The first question is why to overhaul a system that was very powerful, actually, because it became a mess. At the end, we had something like 600 metadata bases for less than 150 statistical operations. Metadata were described for each operation in several databases, one for each purpose, and every metadata base had its own model. So there was redundancy and a risk of inconsistencies, and globally, a lack of coherence, not only about metadata, but about all our statistical production. So we needed to overall models and tools to have one model for everyone, and to make metadata management an integrated part of statistical activity. And doing that, we intended to take into account the principle 14 of the code of practice. So, what's new in the Hermes project? First of all, it seems obvious, but actually it isn't. We established a list of all the statistical operations of the institute. Every actor involved in the production process had his own list. One for the statistical advisory committee, who decide, who assess the opportunity of carrying out a survey. One for the label committee, who assess the methodology. One for the statistical confidentiality committee. One for the remote data access center. One for the unit, the archive unit. So we are now converging to a unique list of statistical operations. The second goal was to centralize metadata by storing them in the same place instead of having many metadata bases. Then to version metadata. Doing that, as the project began 10 years ago, was launched 10 years ago. While it was going on, we became aware of the necessity of using metadata standards to describe metadata, because more and more data were being exchanged, and we needed to make it easier for machines to use metadata and for our client applications. And also, while we were working on it, we experimented the first metadata-driven process based on DDI standard. It's a questionnaire generator that works. I will tell you a bit more later. An overview of standards used in the project. I've forgotten, but all our conceptual models are compliant with the GSIM. To work on standard, I worked with two colleagues, I have to salute here, who are Franck Auton and Guillaume Dufesse, who are international experts on standard, who did the job. I was just to make it stick together and remind them that we have normal people as users. So data collection instruments, variables, and structure metadata are described in DDI, Data Documentation Initiative. Reference metadata are described in the SIMS framework that was adopted by all the actors, from the beginning to the process to the end. So it can be filled all along the process from the expression of users' need to the archive. Concept, classification, list of operations, and quality reports are in open data and in RDF, in a RDF format. Concepts and classification are modelized according to SCOS and XCOS, which are models of W3C consortium. And for implementing the themes, Franconto created a special ontology based on SDMX concept, which is still for review, if I am not wrong. So, how is the actual system? We have, not one metadatabase, but two. Because of technical reasons, we had to separate DDI metadata from RDF metadata. So we have two repositories. The link between is a list of statistical operation, and we have a collectical repository for DDI with questionnaires, questions, variables, code lists, description of data files, records, and so on. And RDF triple store with data lift technology for quality reports, themes, metadata, reference metadata, for concepts and classifications. Concepts and classifications may be used to document variables or questionnaires. And what we do is to duplicate concepts and classification in the DDI store and to update them through web services. We are doing it, it's not done yet. Then we have management tools. We have we adopted a Collectica suite solution for DDI metadata. So we have a Collectica designer. And for the others metadata, we developed our, we are still developing our own tools. We have software for concepts, classifications, quality reports. A portal to visualize metadata. And we have an API. We are, it's not complete. We are developing web services and APIs to allow people to export metadata for their own use, like report on a format PDF or text. We have client applications like a remote data access center, which allow researchers to access microdata. And our website, and an API for our business registry. And we intend to develop others' API. And we have something specific, which is a questionnaire designer, a guided user interface to design questionnaires. And it produces DDI file, which is published in a collectical repository and used by a questionnaire generator called Eno, which generate data collection instruments for our business service platform called Coltran. We are also setting a platform for our household surveys with the same technology. Except Collectica, which is a proprietary tool, all our tools are released or will be released in open source so that they can be used at an international level. Now, we have new tools, but we have many things to do now to change the mind, to change the way we work. And we have especially two challenges. One, I think we have yet met it up, is to increase coordination to make sure that all new applications think of using Hermes for metadata. And we have an investment committee which makes sure that every tool designer get in touch with us to investigate about a solution for them. What is more difficult is to set up a new organization to make people fill in metadata all along the life cycle, and not just as a core at the end of each phase of a process. This necessary effort won't benefit to each producer, and that is the difficulty. It will benefit to our institution, our statistical production, and that's why it's very important. Thanks for attention.
Thank you, Marie-Hélène, for providing this very thoughtful insight in the metadata management system of INSEE. Is there a need for clarification or an immediate question? I don't see any hands raising up. So if not, I would like to move forward to the next presenter. The role of statistical products is quite clear, or seems quite clear sometimes when we talk about, we are very, very frequently we talk about statistical products, not quite sure what is meant by product, and when looking deeper in this, it can be challenging to anchor all the information necessary for a statistical product. And we now get some thoughts on this by Rasmus Anker Christiansen from Statistics Denmark. Rasmus is working in the quality section of Statistics Denmark, dealing with implementation of quality reports and GSBPM. And he's working in the quality unit there, and he will provide us with this information. Rasmus, the floor is yours.
Thank you, and thank you for showing up to this session. I will tell you about the development of a statistical product portfolio tool. It's a work that we've been doing for the last year or so. In recent years, we've been implementing Collectica as well. And this has given us an opportunity to build this portfolio tool on top of our metadata. I will start with an illustrative example with, you imagine walking into a supermarket and you look to buy something. In this example, it's diapers, and you find out that the diapers are actually in the wine section. And you want to read the product information sheet, and this sheet can be found by the bread. The product information sheet is named under the title of baby toilets. That's maybe not what you were looking for. But the product information sheet describes the content of a carton of milk. You're totally lost. This example is extreme, of course, but I think we've all been standing in a supermarket like Mr. Travolta and not being able to find what we are looking for. So let's consider an institution like Statistics Denmark, like a supermarket, and how we guide them through our products. So first of all, this work is connected to mainly two principles in the code of practice. The first one is principle 15 with accessibility and clarity, that we present our statistics in a clear and understandable form so we can find what we are looking for with the corresponding metadata and so on. The next principle that I listed is principle 10 and more precisely the indicator 10.1. That we have internal measures to monitor our use of resources. So to monitor the use of resources, you of course need to know exactly what you are producing. Okay, and in identifying a statistical product in Statistics Denmark, we start at the very top. We have an estimated value of some phenomenon, and we obtain it through an aggregation of some observed data. And a product could be, in this example, the consumer price index, which is the price change of consumer products. Other well-known international products could be the labor force survey or the household budget survey. But we need to be more specific when we think about what is an actual statistical product. So, the component of a statistical product in Statistics Denmark is, first of all, a press release in Danish, new figures. We have corresponding tables in the stat bank, that's the one on the bottom. Then we have documentation, the quality report. And then we have a domain web page where you can go, like a subpage on the web page where you can go and find the information you would like. For instance, the link to the table and the quality report and so on. So this project was about connecting the dots between these components of a statistical product. So identification of the products, and then we have to map the associations, and then we connect all the information, and in the end we need to present it as an overview. But to map these products, we first need to understand the hierarchy of a statistical product. So on top we have the product itself, it could be the consumer price index. This will consist of one or more quality reports if necessary to document something specific. And each quality report then has one or more tables in the stat bank where you have the actual numbers, the actual product. And all of these elements, they live in a subject, in our subject structure. That's the glue that binds everything together. So here it is, the proof of concept. This is the beta version, the first version of the portfolio tool. It's a pivot table in Excel for now, where we have a dashboard with organizational filters, so you can go in each division and see what do you have in economic statistics, a list of statistics from there, and then it's automatically updated twice a day, 7 in the morning, 7 in the evening, so you have fresh and relevant information. And you don't need to manual update, at least not this portfolio tool, but of course you need to manual update the underlying metadata. And this, I took the consumer price index again as an example. So the product consists of three quality reports, one for the consumer price index, one for the net price index, the index without taxes and so on, and then you have the EU harmonized index for consumer prices. And you can see it's a monthly statistic frequency. You can see which division it is. You can see the responsible person. You have the product number in the time registration system, the domestic law, the EU law, the ESMS metadata handler acronym. So we can send the quality report directly to Eurostat. And you have the which subject in the subject structure it's in. And then you have the specific tables with the naming of the table, the first and last period, and then the contact person of each specific table. And this this is, of course, only the consumer price index, but this is for all our statistical products. And you can see the hierarchy from before. It goes from one to many. And if we look at the background, the logical data model, we have like in France we have Collectica, and then we have a repository called SumTools. Everything from SumTools goes in the stat bank. Everything that should be published goes in the stat bank, and from the stat bank and from Collectica we draw this information automatically. What we would like to do is connect the products to the products in the time management system automatically, and then to other common systems. It could be our data warehouse. You have statistics registered in the data warehouse. So connecting these two dots as well. Yeah, and that brings us to what's next. We need to find a way to link these products to the time management system and also avoid ambiguous naming. So much of the work will consist of renaming products, renaming quality reports, so it's the same across every platform. Then we want to, this was a first draft in Excel. So we want to make it a bit more fancy and do a product in a program called Power BI. And then you can have dynamic, clickable features. You can do statistics. You can click and say, I want the number of statistics from the economic department and to each division as well. And we have the beta version is now available in our management information portal. And this brings us to future possibilities. So coming back to the supermarket example, we will be able to have a clear defined inventory of statistical products, and it would make sense where we have them and present them to the customers. Having two, three, four names for one statistical product may not be a problem for the individual, but if you take it as for the whole organization, you multiply it by the number of products. So this makes us better equipped once we start working through the silos, like the data warehouse. Then we can, when we find the link to the time management system, we can have a more precise product-based costing. So we can find out how much resources do we actually spend on producing this statistical product. And if we get really fancy, we can start breaking down the activities according to the GSBPM, so we have also can have activity based costing, and of course decision making for the future. We can have a budget situation, and we need to relocate some resources, and this tool will give us the information that we have one product that we don't send to Eurostat. We found out that we don't have many users clicking on this, but we spent maybe 2 full-time equivalent producing this statistic. So this information will help us make decisions for relocating resources. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Rasmus, for this very comprehensive talk. Are there questions for clarification? Yes, we have one. Do we have a micro? One moment.
Thank you. I suppose my question is, do you have a definition of what a statistical product is? I'm from the Irish Statistical Office, and we're doing something very similar, and we're struggling, I suppose, with the business areas. One person's definition of a product is differing from another business area.
Well, it depends. It really varies, because one product can be just one table with one quality report, and one product can be 30 tables and 2 quality reports. And that's why it's really hard to come up with a final figure of how many products do we actually have. For now, the way we defined it and the way we took it out of the metadata systems, we are around 270 for Statistics Denmark. And well, I'm still negotiating with the guys from agriculture, because they see it maybe one way and I see it maybe another way. So it really depends. And it also depends on, do you look at the way you produce or do you look at the way you publish?
Okay, so with that, I would like to proceed to the third and last presentation of this session, which will be held by Georgiana Ivan from Eurostat. She's working there in Unit F1, dealing with methodological input for social statistics. She's a sociologist. And she will present a paper, which is common work with Mihaela Agafite, as well from Eurostat. And it's now more product-oriented. The talk is about labor market characteristic of European citizen living in another European country. So Georgiana, the floor is yours.
Thank you. First of all, thank you to everybody who is present here at this session. I know it's tough. It's close to the end of the conference, early in the morning. So I hope your reward will be some data about something that concerns many people in this room. So like myself, I think many of you are European citizens living in another EU country. And if you're not in this category, for sure you know people that are. So I will talk to you about why we decided to look more into details into this category, and how we approached it. What were the methodological considerations, how we decided to publish, and at the end, some concrete examples of data, and of course, the conclusions. So, to be honest, there was also a personal dimension in choosing to look at this data. So, almost everybody at Eurostat comes from another EU country, and it's interesting to know how many of us are abroad from each country and what are their labor market characteristics. But of course, there is also a strong policy interest in this data, because there is not, until now, there was not so much data available from the emigration country perspective. Of course, in the labor force survey, you have data about the immigrants. So in each country, how many Romanians there are, how many Polish people, how many French people, let's say. Well, the percentage, let's say. But there was not the data about how many Polish people live abroad, or how many Romanian people live abroad, or how many French people live abroad, and what are their labor market characteristics, so what is their employment rate, level of education, this kind of data. So there are not so many tracking or retrospective surveys. So how we decided to go about it? Well, we took data from the labor force survey and we aggregated across samples, so across national samples. So we looked at all the Polish people that are Polish born, because we had both. We looked at both perspectives, so country of citizenship or country of birth, separately. So we took all Polish people that we could find in the labor force survey in all countries, in all national samples, and then we aggregated this data and broke it down by characteristics like age, sex, so demographic characteristics, but most importantly, level of education, employment rate. And if this is what we have done so far, and if it's successful, we could try to look also at unemployment rates, for example, so other indicators. So I guess in a conference that is focused on methodology, people are very interested on the methodological considerations. So what were our problems, let's say? Well, there are still quite some unreliable data, especially for the small countries. So generally for Luxembourg or Cyprus or Malta, data was not reliable because of small samples, of course. There is also potential bias because generally, DLFS is not designed specifically to capture migrants. And that is actually a more general problem, not just for our data, but also for the migrant integration statistics or other statistics about migrants, because DLFS is a very important source for this data. And generally, DLFS is based, I mean, the population selected to take part is based on the resident population concept, which is to be in the country for 12 months or to at least, or to have the intention to stay for at least 12 months. So short-term movements are not captured. And then, of course, there is the issue of how to calculate accuracy, so sampling error or confidence interval, because we are dealing with different samples that have slightly different methodologies. So this is quite burdensome. Then we have tried to have an attempt at calculating this accuracy, and to use a reporting country as a stratum and calculate variance. Then we had a series of issues. It's a very complex design. We don't always have access to all the information on data treatments in the member states. So we took the easy way out, so to speak, because we agreed with the labor force survey team to use their flagging system to give an estimation about the accuracy of the data. And the flag system is also relatively complex, so it depends on the cell size, so how many people you have in that cell, and the cell is the aggregated figure across member states. So if there are less than three, this data is not of course disseminated, and the reliability limits depend on the sample size and design. And if you ask me more details about it, I will have to say that I don't know. So we just took it automatically. So we published on 22nd of May this year. We have 12 data sets, six by country of citizenship, six by country of birth. We have the total population of working age, so separately 1564 or 2064, broken down by gender and education level, separately, not in the same data set. So you cannot cross it because of issues of sample size. And employment rates broken down by gender and educational level, also separately. And of course, we have a metadata file, an explanatory article, and a news release. So then we come to the more interesting, in my opinion, data part. So here I show you some graphs together with the questions that can be answered using this kind of data. So the one that was most interesting and most picked up by the media is the actual percentage of citizens of working age that in each country are abroad. So here you can see that almost 20% of the Romanian labor force is abroad, and there are quite high percentages, for example, in Lithuania and Croatia as well, while in the western part of the European Union, there are smaller percentages, much smaller, up to around 1%. If you look in absolute numbers, of course, the results will be different because the large member states as Germany would be much higher up. So this was quite commented in the media after our press release. And we also had, we also showed how this evolved with time. And then an important question that we wanted to ask and that to answer and that people ask is about the brain drain from especially east to west, but also south to north. So are people living abroad, do they have more often than in the country of birth or of citizenship, tertiary education or not? And actually, what we show is that this is actually, this brain drain is more common from south to north and not so much from east to west, because there you have a similar proportion of people with high and low education than you have in the country. That the ones that live abroad have a similar structure than the ones who are in the country. So people live proportionally. And of course, a very important issue is the employment rates. So are people having higher employment rates when they are mobile than when they stay in the country? And of course, the answer is that people live for a job and their employment rate is significantly higher. And we also looked across time and we saw that the employment rate of the mobile citizens is actually increasing faster than the European average. And there is also another interesting finding that I didn't present in this slides is that especially for people with a low level of education from countries like Romania or Poland or Bulgaria, their employment rate is much higher than in their country of citizenship, for the similar group, I mean, of course. While for countries like from the south of Europe, so Italy and Spain and Greece, the employment rate of people with tertiary education is much higher than for those that are still living in their country of citizenship. Okay, so a few answers. The share of EU mobile citizens varies very much, ranging from almost 20% in Romania to 1% in Germany. The total in the EU is 3.8%, so it's not very high overall. It has slightly increased over time, in 10 years by 0.8%. And the tertiary graduates were generally more mobile than the rest of the population, but this is especially the case from people for people from the western part of the EU. And they have higher employment rates, and especially this difference is very high in the Mediterranean countries. So I will reach to the conclusions, because I see that the audience is getting sleepier. too much data, maybe, for Friday morning. This is an innovative way to use information that is readily available. And actually, this is the kind of statistics that we can all only produce at EU level. So it's really added value, because although there are agreements to exchange data between NSIs, but not at this, not between all NSIs, let's say. So it's a way to use data that is already there and to produce statistics that are interesting to users and to policy users as well. And to the policy users in the countries that send the data as well, so at the national level. There are methodological challenges, there are small samples, the difficulty to calculate accuracy, and we need extended external validation to be sure that our statistics are of good quality. So that's all. Thank you very much, and I'm waiting for your questions.
Thank you, Georgiana. Are there questions directly related now? Yes, there are two we have.
Bert Taskinen from Statistics Finland. Thank you for the presentation. It's not always easy to contact this kind of mobile new labor force or employed people. You said something about validation of the data. Did you actually made any analysis of the possible non-response bias among these specific target group?
Well, the obvious answer is no, because this is not something that we can do at Eurostat level. We could maybe start a task force and look what you can communicate about what happens at the national level. But we are aware that there is this potential bias, as I already mentioned, because the LFS is not targeted to capture migrants.
Hi, Johannes Volk from the Statist Germany. I have a question. According to Switzerland, I'm not sure if there is data available, but are there considerations to include Switzerland? Because maybe, especially for Germany, that would be interesting.
Actually, we already have published also So separately, we have data for the EU 28 countries, but also for the EU plus EFTA. So we have aggregated also across together, so EU and EFTA. So yes, this data is already available in and in our data sets.
Faiz?
Hello, my name is Faiz Alswal. I come from Statistics Finland. I have more of a comment or a suggestion for improving this. You said that there are small samples for some specific countries and some other methodological issues. Would it be possible to combine some countries into larger regions so that we would talk about Southern Europe, Northern Europe, East, West, and Central Europe instead of individual countries? This might be beneficial for tackling, as you mentioned, the small samples and low number of observations, but also make the presentation more understandable. I found it very, very interesting, but also at the same time, difficult to read the graphs and 27 bars. And personally, I'm really interested in larger regions than individual countries. Also, knowing that there are many, also you have colleagues who work in Luxembourg, but they live in Germany. So this kind of pendling from one country to another could be tackled by combining countries that lie close to each other. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for your suggestion. I'm aware that the graphs are too crowded, and I'm actually planning to try to change them. But regarding your suggestion, we at Eurostat, we try to disseminate data at the individual level of the country, I mean. So I don't think it would work. We don't even have codes in our data sets for... even when we use the terminology Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Southern Europe, is not so well accepted because there is no clear boundaries. What does that mean? So it's a bit sensitive. So to disseminate this kind of data like that would not be definitely possible. And the issues are just for this these small countries because, of course, Luxembourg has a population of... well, it used to be 500,000. So out of this 500,000, let's say 60,000 live abroad. It's very difficult to, you know, find them in a sample survey. So the issue is just with the small countries, not with the others. But thank you for your suggestions. The graphical representation, I definitely agree, and I will try to work on it.
Okay. So thank you. And now I would like to invite you for general discussion points or other questions related to the three presentations we heard. Are there any questions, comment? Yes, Karsten?
Thank you, and thank you all for very inspiring, good presentations. I have a question for Marie, for your new system. It looked very interesting, as Rasmus said. I'm from Statistics Denmark, too. We also use the tool Collectica, and we also use the building bricks from the DDI system. But what I would like to ask you about is that your new system is aimed that it should be a common production system also for the producers of all the statistics in C. But do you also have a plan of make it external? So, I mean, the users could go through your metadata system, try to find the right statistics, and especially I'm thinking about the researchers who might be more interested in the microdata. Thank you.
We can take some more questions if there are. Are there other questions? Yes, Faiz and Martina. Then, so one and two. So either as you like. So.
Hello.
Faisal Zohar from Statistics Finland. I have a question for Marie and Rasmus. You presented your metadata work and mentioned that it will eventually, or it could eventually, contribute to automata process improvements and how to automatize processes, as well as making internal use of resources more efficient. Can you discuss these possible improvements a bit further and elaborate how that could be possible?
Okay, then we're going to take a third question from Martina.
We make you run around this morning. Good morning, everybody. My name is Martina Hahn from Eurostat. I have a question going in a similar direction than the one from Carsten, towards the external use of your metadata systems. And my question is for both Marie and also Rasmus. What is the potential here, or have you investigated a little bit the potential of linked open metadata for enhancing the user experience one day of these metadata systems that could be a building block of going beyond actually an internal use towards a more external applications? And one question for Georgiana. You were very open and explicit about potential shortcomings. Have you considered to release this data as experimental statistics? Or what was your main thinking to launch it right away?
Okay, so I would like to invite the speakers for first round of answer, then we can go eventually to a second round. Okay, Marie, there was this
so
question.
I'll answer the first question about external uses. Our first target is to open access to the statistical public system. That means all statistical units in the different ministries. But we have problems, constraints with security. We can't easily open our Collectica repository. We are thinking of a cloud solution. The triple store RDF can already be accessed by a Sparkle endpoint on our website. It's rdf.ince.fr. We don't think of opening it wider than public statistics for now. For the access to microdata, there are two ways of accessing metadata and not directly from INSEE. One for what is called Centre Quetelet, who has a portal to ask to access researchers' files. And the other is the Remote Data Access Center, which has a secure process to access microdata. I hope I've answered questions about external access. About automatization of process, what we want to promote is to use metadata to build applications. The first is a questionnaire generator. Difficult to sum up how it works. We have a DDI XML file, which is an input for an application which generate data collection instrument, and it's a transformation, and then it's used by a platform collect. We have other projects, one about data editing, describing controls in our Collectica repository, and the data editing application which use these metadata to build this software. And the third is about products. And I am impressed that you have been able to identify all the statistical products. We are far from that. But what we want to do first is to use metadata to generate statistical products using metadata probably in RDF store. And we intend to generate N-cubes, for instance. And these N-cubes will be can be accessed from the RDF triple store for everyone.
The question from Fais. I think first and foremost, it's an information is a management information system. I'm pretty sure that almost all companies producing stuff, cars, whatever, know exactly what the price of producing one product is. So in time, we may be able to say what is the cost of producing an iteration of a labor force survey, or in more exactly. We have an idea now, of course, but this may be more precise. In terms of efficiency, I would say the biggest benefit is the reuse of metadata. Having subject matter responsible choosing from already defined metadata instead of inventing and typing in the metadata for every domain, I would say it's a massive efficiency gain. The magnets, the question about the magnitude, that's really a tough one, but the question about the user experience is that we already started to put some classifications and some concepts and so on in our webpage. And these are harmonized, so for the user experience, the user can count on one description of one thing will be the same as a description of the same thing in another place on the web page, and for me that's a better user experience at least.
Okay, so
thank you, Martina, for your question. Yeah, I actually didn't even consider to publish in experimental statistics because we had a discussion with the labor force survey team, and they thought that these tables are interesting and that they will publish under their data tree. So in a way, this gives us the quality stamp. It's approved by them. They did not think that there is a problem with the quality of the data. So yes, we went this route. Maybe if they said no, this is not this is risky, or so it was the assessment of the data production unit that encouraged us to go further in this direction. So thank you.
Okay, so thank you. Are there further questions? More questions? Well, I have a question to Marie-Hélène and Rasmus. You both mentioned DDI in your presentation as metadata, which is a huge metadata standard, very, very big. And also, it's undergoes sometimes revision. So how do you cope with this development of DDI and how to interact? Do you then overwork your system too with regard to this to these revisions or updates of the metadata standards?
Ah, it's a good question. By chance, we have in the team in charge of revising the DDI a member of our team who is careful about evolution so that we won't have to change our system. The way we manage that is by participating in all the instances about the standard.
Yeah, the answer would be more or less the same. You follow the development. You have persons responsible for keeping up with developments. And for instance, we went from the SIMS to the SIMS 2.0, and we updated it. And it was a, I wouldn't say easy task, but it was an easier task because of the way that DDI is built. So we can just pick and choose the elements and then construct the new SIMS standards, for instance. So of course it's a manual update every time there's an update, but the DDI is a good platform for this, I think.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there more questions, or is everybody satisfied now with all answers? And okay. So I'm going to formally close this session a little bit earlier than on the schedule, but nevertheless, yeah. Oh, there is a question, so I'm going to reopen the session.
Just a short question for Georgiana. I think the figures you show is really interesting, also in a policy context in Europe. Do you have any plans to go further with these kind of common statistics for the European countries? For instance, you could say, I know from the LFS, you also have information of how long have you been working in this place, or how many hours do you work, and you could compare that also from country to country. But do you have any plans of going further in this development?
Thank you for your question. Well, as I mentioned at the end of the presentation, yes, we are planning, if this data is really used and requested, to add further indicators on this category. So, but our next step would be, for example, unemployment rates. And there, it's a bit more complicated because of smaller percentages, so smaller samples. So that's why we didn't include it from the beginning. What you mentioned, so hours worked, that would be very easy to do. The thing is that we have to have a request, let's say, that people want this indicator. So then we ask to the colleagues in the labor force survey, and it will happen. So going further, it's not a problem. It's just that the way we disseminate data in these data sets, there's this proliferation of data sets, so it needs to be useful for the users, and then it will be produced. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Another question? So, okay, then I'm closing the session. I would like to ask for a special applause for all the speakers. Okay, thank you all, and